Hello, and welcome back to the Dentistry Podcast. If you're a new listener, hi, I'm Gabby Bissett, the Deputy Editor of Dentistry. And as the series continues, we hope to bring you stories, advice, and insight from some of the profession's top leaders and biggest names. In this episode, I'm very pleased to be joined by Dr. Christian Coachman. Best known for pioneering digital smile design, his concept is now used by thousands of dentists across the world. Starting out his career as a lab owner in his home country of Brazil, we discuss how this informed his dentistry and his journey towards becoming a household name within the profession.
But if I can say something, you know, in certain moments, you know, when things go wrong, you are usually very hard on yourself. Many times I was on myself. And also when things went really well, you think you are amazing. So my suggestion to myself 20 years ago would be, don't take yourself too seriously, for good and for bad. When you do something amazing, don't think you're too cool. And when you do something too bad, don't think you're too bad. You know, just don't take yourself too seriously. Life is too short for that, and just make life lighter.
So hi, Christian. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation, and I'm looking forward.
Absolutely. So I've introduced you as the founder of Digital Smile Design, but something I think is really interesting about your journey into dentistry is your beginnings as a dental technician.
Yep. Yeah, that's actually, I got into dental school first, but right at the beginning, I was kind of frustrated with the experience in dental school, and my father suggested me to start doing some lab work for him in parallel, see if I could find myself in that profession, and I loved it, and I did the dental technology course in parallel to it, finished first, became a technician first, then a dentist after, but stayed working as a technician for 20 years, yeah.
Wow. And I think that's such a great foundation to perhaps your career thereafter. And I think it's quite an unusual one, I guess, a lot of the time when people first go into dentistry. Do you think it informed your career well? Do you think it was a great starter for you into dentistry?
100%. Yeah. Everything I was able to develop later on was based on this dual experience. From the clinical side, but also from the lab side, and even the beginnings of DSD was based on developing solutions to improve communication and teamwork between the dentist and the lab technician. So sure, yeah. And besides the fact that, you know, working in the lab, you practice so much your eye skills, your hand skills, the process of designing, the artistic principles, and things that a restorative dentist needs to master as well. So this is kind of a tradition in Brazil. There are several technicians that become dentists, several professionals on the restorative world. They have this combination. But 25 years ago when I did it was not that usual, but it was amazing. And I owe this to my dad.
So this is a tradition now in Brazil, is it, to sort of go through dental technology first before moving on to dentistry?
Yeah. The Brazil became a center of developing great technicians. We export great technicians all over the world. The whole world of dentistry, restorative dentistry, knows Brazil for that as well. You know, so we have great technicians, and every year new technicians coming, and many of them, after working a few years as a technician or several years as a technician, they decide to go back to school and do dentistry. So I think it's a cool trend. Something that actually, my grandfather in the 30s, he did it, that's who started this tradition in our family. He was first a technician for his older brother that was a dentist, and then he became a dentist. And then my father, the same. My father and my uncle, they started working in the lab first, and then they became a dentist. So I followed their steps and I did the same. The only difference is that when I graduated from dentistry, instead of doing what everybody does, I became a dentist, but decided to stay working as a technician for other dentists, even though I was a dentist myself. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. Do you think that's something that the other countries could take note of? Because I feel that people are missing a trick there with those two. Because I mean, that's obviously not something that is as common, say, in the UK or perhaps the US.
Theoretically, ideally, in dental school, if you decide to go through the path of restorative dentistry or do a specialization in prosthetics, you should have that background. You should study that. And some of the top schools, they have a lot of content on things that technicians should know that they are teaching the dentist, and that should every dentist that decides to restore smiles should understand very well the lab work. So since we don't have that so strong in dental school, doing the dental technician course and working as a technician becomes an informal, perfect course, let's say, preparation to be a restorative dentist.
I can imagine. And I mean, you come from a family of dentists. I think it goes back 6 generations, stretching all the way back to the 19th century.
Back to
18th century. I mean, that is a very long time ago now. Did you feel that was there some pressure on you when you entered dentistry? Did you sort of carry the weight of your ancestors on your shoulders when you decided to pursue that career?
In a positive way, in a very positive way. I love tradition, I love history, but my father never put pressure at all. Actually, the opposite. You know, me and my brother almost didn't pick dentistry because my father never, ever even mentioned or took us to his office. You know, we didn't grow up thinking about being a dentist, and my father never really cared in a good way. So we had absolutely no pressure, but I still believe that somehow the ancestors were looking after us from above and kind of guide us through the decision. And in every important moment, I can honestly feel them guiding me and helping me from above on major moments and giving me the inspiration to develop the work that I develop.
Yeah, I can imagine. It must be incredible to know that you have that history and that people who have come before you have sort of trodden the same footsteps that you have, and you're continuing that up to the present day. Mm-hmm. And obviously with that, you've created this name for yourself and this international brand and concept and philosophy, which is the digital smile design. Yes. And I think it's important to explore that because so many dentists, it's just a household name now for them. And obviously it'd be really interesting to understand how you got there. Mm-hmm. So what were the beginnings for this? How did this come to you, and how did you take it from perhaps a concept that was in your head to a concept that was practical and helpful for other clinicians?
I think that the beginning actually starts even way before me going to dental school. You know, I was very fortunate to have a very open-minded education that is stimulated creativity and freedom and curiosity and not being stuck with the numbers and the grades and the obligation to become just a formal professional. I think that unfortunately conventional education really harms the creativity of kids and young people. So I was fortunate, I was lucky that my parents were completely against this type of classic education and allowed us to become whatever we wanted to become. And that really made me a very curious person. I was never settled. I was always questioning myself. I was always very passionate about understanding processes and things and why things were the way they were and could we develop better ways of doing things, you know. So every time I was doing something, I was not just wanting to do that thing better, but I was always trying to explore why I was doing something better or why not doing something better. And this trying to understand how the brain works on the process of becoming good at something. What are the steps that you go through to learn something? And that, of course, made me fall in love with education in general, you know, trying to teach or trying to understand how to share ideas. And it made me also passionate about communication and how to motivate people, how to get people on board of ideas. how to make people listen to me. So I was always into it naturally, I think. So at the beginning, you know, even when I was a young technician and didn't know much, I was already trying to share and teach the little things that I knew. And I started to realize that people were happy to listen. People were curious about what I was doing. And I started to then really try to think about everything that I was doing and everything that could be done better. And I realized that as a dental technician, I was doing a good job. I was learning. I was starting to work with very good dentists. And I was proud of my work, but I realized there was so much room for improvement in terms of efficiency, in terms of processes, systems, and workflows, and more clear steps, and taking the best out of each person in the team, and improving teamwork. And that's how DSD was born. You know, it was a bunch of little ideas that I started to put together to improve the process of rehabilitating smiles, empowering the dentist and the technician communication and collaboration. And that's how I started with the first few courses in 2009. And it looked like people enjoyed it. And it grew from there. And it never stopped growing.
So then it got to where it is now, and obviously it's so well established and so well known, and it's a philosophy that I think, you know, you've sold people on now. It's something that's just, it's accepted and it's incorporated naturally. Can it go further? Do you feel like there is a next step for DSD?
Well, there's always so many beautiful next steps in life and everything, you know. We are always moving, that sensation that nothing is never completely done, and the excitement of improving the process. You know, I think that's what keeps us alive and motivated. So we continue to improve. Of course, that technology is evolving so much, and we are constantly bringing new technologies to streamline the process that we develop, you know. So now we are in a moment where technology is so mature. This was not the case 5 years ago or 15 years ago when I started to develop the DSD concept. A bunch of ideas were just a dream, was a vision. And of course, we are proud that many of these visions helped many companies and professionals to develop the future that is now the reality. So we're very proud of being part of the development of modern dentistry. But now that everything is so mature, it's all about bringing this to reality, making it more affordable, more accessible for more dentists, and simplifying. You know, simplifying the process to allow more dentists to help more patients.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you made a really good point there about how far it's come in such a small space of time. I think it's in aesthetic dentistry in particular that is evident. And I think one way that has really manifested is in things like social media and Instagram, where clinicians and professionals can sort of showcase their work essentially for everybody to see. And it's something that more and more patients are looking to have. You know, aesthetic work is so in demand right now. And I think one question, I mean, I always wonder as somebody who isn't a dentist, but something I'm sure listeners would also be interested to know is there such thing as too much when it comes to something like a smile makeover? Are there limits that clinicians should perhaps be imposing or giving themselves, or is this kind of a myth?
No. There is definitely a lot of too much. This is definitely a very important point. And what we are living today is way beyond too much. Is something that is negative for dentistry in terms of over treatment and too much focus on aesthetics. We need, of course, that doesn't. We will find the balance, like everything. When something becomes big, it becomes too big and too strong, and people lose a little bit the reason why we are health providers. But I believe we are in this journey of finding the balance. over-treatment is a pandemic all over the world, destroying teeth in the name of aesthetics. It is a huge problem. Social media does a great job in so many things, helping us as a forum of sharing good ideas, but is also disastrous when inspiring young dentists, you know, and making young dentists think that, you know, those few doctors with a lot of followers, you know, sell a lot of dentistry, this is what they want to become. Unfortunately, the people that are more famous on social media are not the ones doing the best dentistry and doing the best for their patients. And I just hope that young dentists will improve their filter, improve their perception of why did you choose dentistry, you know? And when you choose a healthcare profession, you need to understand that you need to give up on many things and you need to focus on what really matters. So over-treatment is a disaster. And just one thing that I always tell, you know, my students, you know, aesthetics should never, ever be the priority, but beautiful consequence of the right treatment, a beautiful consequence, never the priority. And what we see today on Instagram is aesthetics as a huge priority and people destroying patients' teeth and mouth in the name of aesthetics, not really understanding the real problem, not deeply diagnosing and treating the real problems, not having the impact on people's life that people could, that doctors could have if they focused on the right thing. So hopefully the people that are doing the right thing will start speaking up and sharing, you know, the principles of high quality dentistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you made a good point there about social media. It definitely does have advantages, but I think it's very much a double-edged sword in a way, isn't it? There is that side of it that's absolutely incredible. I think particularly over the pandemic, clinicians have found it's been a great way to connect and network when in-person events weren't possible. Yes. But then you have got that other side of it, like you just mentioned, that can actually be detrimental to the profession and perhaps give younger dentists or potential dentists the wrong idea of what dentistry is all about. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to other people as well, and they've said, particularly nowadays, if your motivation for getting into dentistry is money, perhaps isn't the right profession for you. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not.
100%, 100%. Yeah. Dentistry is very generous. If you are a real good dentist, you know, if you do the best for your patients, you're going to have a good life. You will have a good life. Now, if you want to have private jets and be at the, you know, a celebrity and make like and become a billionaire, you choose the wrong profession. You know, because if that's your goal, you're going to do things that you shouldn't do in people's mouth. You know, so as I said, when you pick a medical profession, you need to understand that you need to give up on certain things and you need to focus on what really matters. A friend of mine just told me recently, a friend of mine told me, you know, dentists should be paid more to do less. And I loved it, you know, because it's all about preservation. It's all about prevention. It's all about providing health and confident smiles, not perfect. You know, beauty doesn't come from perfect smiles. Beauty comes from confident smiles. And we need to, as dentists, as smile rehabilitators, we need to recover health. We need to protect health and recover confidence. And too many people are convincing patients that perfect smiles is what matters. Yeah. And it's not.
It's not. No. No, I think that's a very good point. So you've been in dentistry for a long time now, and you've seen it go from, I guess, one strand to another. I think a question that would be interesting to answer is, where do you see it going now? You've seen it come from A to B, and obviously, like you said, things never stop evolving, things never stop going forward. So for you personally, where do you see the next 5 years, say, for dentistry?
I think that we are entering a beautiful phase of more mature, comprehensive care. I think that dentistry will start waking up for the fact that we are part of medicine. Of course, there are many doctors already knowing that and performing like that. But we need the majority of dentists to realize that we are not hairdressers. We are a physician. We are on the medical world, and we are part of different. And this whole cosmetic, superficial behavior, we need to change this into a much more holistic, comprehensive healthcare approach. And I think that we're going to see, hopefully, on social media, many more doctors talking about that. And hopefully, in 5 years, we're going to have posts with as much likes as these smile makeover posts. We're going to have posts about prevention, about systemic health, about comprehensive care, about interdisciplinary dentistry, about how to sleep better because of dentistry, how to live better because of dentistry. And I think, I really hope that this is going to become a huge trend, and even bigger trend than aesthetics.
Yeah, I agree with that. That'd be a very good thing to see in the future. And actually something that I think is entirely possible. I think the conversation about prevention is so huge at the moment, and just health in general, given what everybody's been through the last 18 months, 2 years, I think it is more relevant than ever. So I think that is feasible, and my fingers are crossed that people recognise, and clinicians recognise, and patients recognise that it's this health element of dentistry that is at the forefront of it, as you described earlier. I think it'd also be good to talk about your business side, which I know you have said, well, from my research, you've said you are not a businessman first and foremost. That isn't actually how you got into dentistry. You didn't know much about business when you got into dentistry. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm learning on the fly totally. As dentists, we have very little education on the business side. And but I of course also fell in love with that part of dentistry. You know, it's I'm having a lot of fun learning how to be a businessman, how to be a CEO, how to grow a company. There's so much to learn there. It's exciting. And also to understand and to help dentists to understand that if you want to own your clinic, your office, you know, you need to have a minimum level of a business mindset. I always say that we are masters in dentistry, but amateurs on running a dental office. And in the next decade, I believe there will be very little room for amateur dental office managers, very little. So every dentist will have to make a choice, you know, either you become a great leader, a great manager, or you partner up without one, or you work for one. There's no way out. There's three options, and there's no right or wrong. It's just a matter of you choosing what you want to do. If you want to just be a great clinician, you can, and you're going to have to work for a great manager who provides you the conditions for you to focus on what you love doing. But running the offices the way we saw dentists running offices for the last few decades, I don't think this is going to be feasible on the next decade.
No, I agree. I think it's very much a brand now, isn't it, as well, dentistry. You need to make sure that you've got that part nailed, as well as the actual clinical work itself. I think to get the right patients in, and to get patients in, you need to have that sort of all-round approach which incorporates the business side. Obviously, you say you're not very well accustomed to the business side, but you obviously are now, and you know we're all learning on the job, and we're all going learning things as we go. But obviously you must have learned so much in the years that you've with DSD and things like that. Would you say this was the biggest challenge for you, getting your head around this business side of things?
For sure, for sure. You know, I was naturally good with my hands. So being a technician, of course, you start, you know nothing, but if you have good hands and you have good aesthetic principles, you know, your good eyes, you learn, you develop, and you grow into a good technician. You know, I was also naturally, without studying, I became a good communicator, and that became my profession for the last decade, speaking, and still my main job, to speak, to motivate, to teach. So as a communicator, I also grew into this kind of naturally. But as a businessman, it didn't come naturally. So the dental technician and the teacher inside me, my passion for communication and marketing, all these things, of course, hard work, a lot of hard work, but it grew naturally in me as I was experiencing the opportunities. But the business side, no. And the business side, you know, I'm still learning. I was lucky. And I was very lucky to meet great mentors on the business side, very smart people on the business side, people that helped me a lot and are still helping. And I'm still trying to do a decent job to make sure that my company survives, that my company grows.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, I think you're very well placed to give some advice for people who are perhaps looking to venture into that business side of dentistry, mm-hmm. which for so many is quite scary and daunting, as I can imagine it was for you at the beginning. What kind of advice would you give them from what you've learned, perhaps the falls and the challenges you've had, but also the highs you've experienced as well? And what kind of advice would you give those clinicians, young or old, who are looking to perhaps get involved in the business side a little bit more?
I would say that many advices, but one very important one is that don't start projects just because you think the idea is very good. You know, ideas are very good ideas. The world is full of very good ideas, and they take us nowhere. Or, you know, the implementation, systems, processes, it's actually more important than good ideas. You can take an average idea and make it successful with good processes and systems, and you can have a great idea that goes nowhere if you don't have these processes and systems. Basically, my suggestion is, before investing on anything, before buying anything, before deciding to remodel your office, to buy this technology, to expand your office, you know, to do this or that, before any of these major decisions, make sure you learn how to put a very, very clear business plan in front of you. You know, write down exactly why you're building this thing. You know, what are the numbers? What are the forecasts for this thing to happen? You know, try to envision the future with numbers, with metrics, and say, this is probably, if I do this, and create worst case scenarios. Always try to see if your idea can survive the worst case scenario, and make sure that this is supported by clear numbers. And only then, you know, find the resources and put your energy and find the money to make it happen, you know.
Yeah, that is an important part. Unfortunately, you need to have that financial backing as well, I guess. I mean, would this be the same advice you'd give a younger Christian? Because something I'm trying to do with all our guests is ask, what would your advice be to a younger you? If you could go back 20, 30 years now, or look back at when you were younger and think, right, what could I change at any point in your life? Is there anything you would change?
That's a good question. I'm a very natural, optimistic person, and I truly believe that everything that happens for a reason. So I don't look back that much thinking, you know, damn, I didn't do this instead of that. Why this decision? You know, if I would have done different, I have zero time wasting on this thought, zero. And I think that all the huge mistakes that I did happened for a reason, and they needed to be there. So of course that, hypothetically, if we look back and we say, if I could have done something different, you know, just to create some type of analysis. But I'm never too hard on myself thinking about, you know, what if I could be better today because of a decision in the past, because I don't believe Even the biggest mistakes I did, looking back, I know exactly why the mistake happened, and I can say if I would have done this differently, this mistake wouldn't happen. But if this mistake wouldn't happen, I wouldn't be here, right now, where I am. And so there's no, I never think about if I had done this differently, I would be in a better situation. No, zero thoughts on that. But if I can say something, you know, in certain moments, you know, when things go wrong, you are usually very hard on yourself. Many times I was on myself. And also when things went really well, you think you are amazing. So my suggestion to myself 20 years ago would be, don't take yourself too seriously, for good and for bad. When you do something amazing, don't think you're too cool. And when you do something too bad, don't think you're too bad. You know, just don't take yourself too seriously. Life is too short for that, and just make life lighter. Do the best you can, and be serious, be honest, be hardworking, be driven, be ambitious, be focused, but don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, I think that's so important, and especially within dentistry, which is really hit hard by mental health and things like that. I think allowing yourself room to make mistakes and then letting yourself make them without feeling too disheartened or frustrated with that is very important for progress as well. It's very cliched, but you can't really expect to get anywhere, can you, unless you make these mistakes, because then you work out what works for you and what doesn't.
But on the other hand, very important, you know, when things go right, don't be too full of yourself, you know.
No,
the ego, you know, ambitious people, people, achievers, people that are focused, people that have a lot of potential, it usually comes with big egos. And ego is your worst enemy. And you need to control it every single day.
Yeah. It's finding that balance, isn't it, between forgiving yourself for making mistakes, but also, I guess, staying grounded when things do go right, which I can imagine you've had that challenge surely over the years. You must have had moments where you could have run away with your ego a little, because it's just a natural instinct. If you succeed, you have that rush of euphoria and you're so happy that you've got somewhere. You can easily lose yourself a little, I can imagine, when you get to that point.
100%. And when that happens, you move back so much. You lose so many people around you. You get blind. You don't see the next step anymore. You don't look inside yourself to find the things that can be even better. So it's just very bad, you know. So for me, it's something that we need to constantly be working on ourselves. And working even more when things feel like they're going right. We need to be constantly understanding that things are going right because of so many factors, and because of so many factors that you don't control, because of so many people that helped you, because of so many ideas that you think are yours, but in the end, they were inspirations that come from so many others. And you need to be grounded. You need to be grounded. And being grounded makes you humble, makes you grateful, because then you understand that when things are doing right, it's almost like a gift to you, that you need to appreciate it and not take it for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great advice. And I think a lot of people can take that away and forward into their careers as well. I think... We've got one more question now for you, Christian, if you don't mind, and it's from our previous guest who was on the podcast, and that was Samir Patel, the clinical director at 11 Dental Wellness in Central London, and I asked Samir to submit a question for our next guest, and that is you, and he very kindly got across a question, which is, what is your greatest quality that you have doubled down on to make you successful?
Okay.
It is a very big question. You can take a moment to think about that.
So the major quality that I believe is my biggest strength.
Yes.
Bring it. That brought me up to this moment here. I may be wrong, but for me it's very clear. It's communication skills. You know, I was, you know, not bragging about myself. I was a very good technician. At my time, I was one of the major ones in the world. But there were so many other technicians that were as good or even better than me, you know. But I was very good communicator as well. And that made me different. I started lecturing in so many great lectures talking about great topics. My topic kind of stood out also because of my communication skills. You know, I was able to find opportunities, bring key people on board, motivate people to stay, to embrace my vision because of my communication skills. I was able to find partners and find investors and because of my communication skills. I was able to spread the word on social media because of my communication skills. So I think that, and we teach a lot about communication for dentists and how this is the shortcut for success. You know, I mean, as Steve Jobs said, you know, the most powerful people in the world are usually great storytellers. So it's all about, for me, is the shortcut to success is to invest on your communication skills, is to make people, not to make people agree with you, but to make people at least respect your point of view. You know, it's not convincing everybody is not victory. It's making people respect, you know, your opinion. And for that, you need to practice your communication.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Christian. That's a lot of wisdom that we've got in today's episode, and I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. So thank you very much for giving up an hour of your time to have a chat.
My pleasure. Count on me always.
Thanks, Christian.